Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ Dhammaṃ Sanghaṃ Namassāmi. So today I thought I would talk about contentment a little bit as a quality and using it in the practice. As monastics, I got introduced to the concept of contentment early on. We talk about this contentment with the basic requisites for monastics. So it's contentment with alms food for our sustenance. So whether it's leftover food that somebody's putting in our alms bowl or whatever food we get in our alms bowl, we're encouraged to be content with shelter for one night. I was thinking about that during the meditation as we have this building coming up, but it's a shelter for, and just reflecting on being content. The Buddha, for monastics, our teaching is to be content with shelter for one night. So protection from the rain, from the wind, from the cold, from the bugs that are biting and crawling and things like that. We're to be content with rag robes. So whatever robes we get offered, even if it's robes. In the time of the Buddha, cloth was in such demand that people would take the cloth off of a body in a cremation ground. And I think you just had to wait 3 days or something after the body had died, and then you could take the cloth off of it because I don't even think we can imagine now because we have just such an excess of it. But it's just a good reminder that that's what we're to be content with. And medicine, the basic medicine in the time of the Buddha was fermented cow's urine. So that was your baseline of medicine. Obviously, there was other medicines, but if you could be content with that, I've never had fermented cow's urine, so I don't know. I don't even know if it would what it would do. Maybe something good. So we have this encouragement to be content with little. It is like saying be content with little. But contentment is also brought up in a chain of causes and conditions that leads to our joy and happiness, that leads to awakening. And what can bring about contentment? Because there are a lot of qualities. You might say, am I content right now? It is good to reflect, am I content right now? Am I content with right here and now how things are? And certain things can bring up contentment. Like I was thinking today, so Marian has an old friend that she's reconnected with, and she wanted to do something kind for this old friend. And Ayamedanandi, we wanted to help out, and Ayamedanandi wanted to help out to do something kind for this person. And there's a lot of generosity in that. And there's a lot of gratitude in that. When you think about when you can do this, and that brings up a sense of contentment. When you're able to have some generosity to be doing something for somebody else. That brings up contentment. Does that bring up contentment? Yeah. And when you have gratitude for when other people are being generous, that also brings up contentment. Or it can. It can be a condition or cause for it. It doesn't necessarily, but it can be a cause for the arising of contentment. For a lot of people, faith is a cause for contentment to arise, whether it's faith in the Buddha or whether it's faith in something beyond this world that's ultimate peace, or that there's this awakening to going beyond suffering. Just reflecting like that can bring up contentment in the mind. Keeping precepts or just having a sense of moral integrity or a sense of really trying to not harm other beings. It's a wonderful quality, and that can really bring up, if we reflect on it in a skillful way, that can bring up contentment in the mind. It's just thinking about things, it's maybe tweaking things a little bit differently, because maybe some people think, well, I'm a good person, but I never thought to be content about being a good person. But why not? Because if we were all good people trying not to harm people, what a beautiful place this world would be to live in, wouldn't it? And to me, that brings up a sense of contentment. And when we have contentment, that brings up joy in the mind. Contentment, when we can we be content with the rain? I'm really happy about the rain. But last week, when they wanted to do a concrete pour, I wasn't as happy. I was very torn. I wanted the building to keep going, but I wanted the trees to get water. But that's, we'll get into that, but that's how the mind is, isn't it? It's always making judgments about things. This is good. Rain is good. Rain is bad. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad. And then can we be content with whatever is happening as it's happening? Because when we are content, when you sit down, think about when you sat down to meditate today. Was the meditation peaceful, or was there a lot of something arising in the mind taking away from the peace? And contentment, when we can start from contentment, it's much easier to bring up. That's a beautiful cause for joy to arise in the mind. And joy is a beautiful cause for peace to arise in the mind. And a turning away from the distraction of the world. So I like to reflect on this quality, contentment, and I like to use it as a gauge for my practice. And I will say, am I content? Am I content right now? As a gauge for my practice. But not as a gauge like, okay, I'm a good nun if I am content with these things, and I'm a bad nun if I'm not content, because that doesn't work, or it has, that hasn't worked for me. Because I think what we have to realize is, in general, these personalities with senses, with sights, smells, taste, touch, and a thinking mind do not naturally incline towards contentment. They naturally, as we're experiencing the world through the senses, and as we grow up as human beings, we're conditioned to see the world in its dualistic state. We see pleasant, we see unpleasant. We see good, we see bad. Right, wrong. Beautiful, ugly. Is this true? So what happens then is when the conditions are difficult, when the conditions are unpleasant, and they could be a simple condition, maybe it's a sight, it's a smell, it's a touch, but maybe it's somebody harming. Maybe it's somebody doing a lot of harm to somebody else, and it's really hard to see. And then you say, how could I possibly be content with that when I'm seeing that? But maybe it's something very simple, like somebody is doing something that's irritating me, or my body is doing something that's irritating me. My body's getting old, and my body's creating pains, and I don't like it because I don't want to have pain in my body, and it's hard to be content then. So what do we have to do? If the Buddha is teaching us contentment, is it like, do we have to like try and suppress when we're not, you know, when conditions are difficult, where say, no, 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 I have to be content? That's not how this teaching goes. This is a teaching about investigation and about understanding. It's not about some sort of brainwashing, trying to convince you that we should all be content, but it's understanding why we're not content. It's understanding why we're suffering. And so that's what I try and do when I'm not content. I start to look and I'm seeing, if it's on a smaller scale, I have to see, what am I attaching to? Am I attaching to the body not getting old or not getting sick or not having pain? Because sometimes the pain in the body gets, you know, that gets me cranky or something. And then I have to reflect, you know, what's the nature of the body? You know, the nature of the body is to get old, is to get sick. Am I the only one that this is happening to? Or we were talking in the market yesterday. It was something with the new house, and we were saying, we're going to make sure that one of the bathrooms in the nuns area has a disabled, like a disabled countertop, so that if there's a nun in a wheelchair, you know, we're preparing for getting old, but it's like, we're just getting old. You know, it's happening right in front of us. And it's just how it is, you know, and you just kind of have to, you can suffer over it, or you can just accept that this is the nature of things. And this is where wisdom comes in, where we can see the nature of the world. There's going to be some very pleasant situations in the world, and then there's going to be challenging situations in the world. And the world is going to be a mix of both. And what's pleasant for one person is not necessarily pleasant for another, and what's unpleasant for one is not necessarily unpleasant for the other. And it very much is based on our conditioning. Even something like war, you can think, well, who would think war is something I can be content about? But maybe the weapons makers, you know, I don't know. I think maybe they're happier. Maybe if it's a war in another country, you know, I don't know how everyone thinks differently. Or maybe some people really thrive in that kind of situation. That kind of camaraderie of being on a team. It's interesting. It's hard to fathom other people's conditioning. But it starts at a really young age, and it really affects us. These are what beliefs do, and they can cause a lot of discontent. So we have to look within our own hearts and see, what is our conditioning? And how is our attachment to our conditioning causing us to suffer? And that's where the meditation really helps. That's where the stopping and stilling really helps, and investigating. and questioning. This is a path that we're, it's not about believing, it's about questioning. The Buddha is giving us some basic suggestions and encouragements. It's like contentment is an encouragement, because I think when I think of the word contentment, I think, yeah, that's something I'd like. I'd like to always be content. But he wants everyone to investigate, to understand this for themselves. So you have to look within. And you have to see, look at the clinging and the craving, right? Of having things a certain way, having people a certain way, having the world a certain way, having the house a certain way, having the nature a certain way. We don't want drought, but we don't want too much rain. We don't want global warming, but we don't want it too cold. We don't want another ice age. You know, it's never ending. But when we can start seeing the nature of the mind and the nature of how the thinking mind and the emotive mind is just following after its conditioning, and then we take the time to sit as we did today quietly in meditation, and you can start to ride the waves, the waves of the thoughts, the waves of the emotions, and see their arising and ceasing, see their changing nature, and really understand when thoughts are arising, when emotions are arising, there's a tendency to make them personal, to say this is my emotion, this is my story, this is my... We take ownership, don't we? We take ownership over the thoughts, and we take ownership over the emotions. And then you might think, well, why wouldn't I take ownership over them? It's my thought, it's my emotion. But really think about it. I look at this little girl, watching this little girl grow up. Her thought, her emotion is coming from the conditioning of her parents and the people around her. You see it happening. And that's what we become. We become all the input coming in. So there's a lot in there to decipher and to tease apart, to tease out, to let go of. We were at a funeral yesterday for a bhikkhuni who was the abbess of a monastery in California for many years. And we were on Zoom. Somebody, one of the presenters, was reading one of the last Dhamma talks she gave. I think she was 93 when she passed away. And it was a couple years ago. And honestly, I don't remember all of it, but what I remember her saying was, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go. And I thought... Because here she was, I think, you know, she's probably about 90 years old. Her body was falling apart. And it was great hearing the story. You know, she started this monastery, and so many people were so grateful for her starting this monastery in California. And she, it really, you know, when I think of Mahapajapati, I think of her, Ayah Gunasari, and I think of, you know, how her struggles and how, you know, she really did this. And it's hard not to get attached when you become a project like that and you're really trying to grow something. And it's a powerful reflection to just say, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go. Because that's where the contentment is. And I think that is really powerful when we can just stop and see the nature of the mind with that sense of it's just arising and ceasing, and the contentment is riding the waves. And you don't get too high on the highs, and you don't get too low on the lows, because you know they're going to change. I think whenever somebody comes in really high on the highs, for whatever reason, I always say, remember those five subjects. I am of the nature to age. I am of the nature to get sick, to die. All that is mine, beloved, and pleasing will become otherwise, will become separated from me. And I am the owner of my kamma, heir to my kamma, born of my kamma. Whatever kamma I shall do for good or for ill of that, I'll be the heir. Because the highs, we have to be able to not get too lost in the highs, because we have to know they're going to change. But also not get too lost in the lows. And see the nature of mind. And see that there is something beyond this mind, this conditioned mind, this thinking mind with all its reactions, views and opinions, and emotions that go along with it. There is something before it, in the moments when there's stillness, and when all these things pass away. And that's contentment. Contentment is like pure consciousness. It's when we can just see the true nature of the world for what it is. And then when there's good thing happening, it's great. When there's bad things happening, it's okay. Good enough. You know? It's not that we don't try and we're still gonna, you know, do what you want to do in the world, do what you think is good and what's useful in the world. But think in your mind, is there contentment with it? Am I trying to get something? Is there contentment in the mind while I'm doing what I'm doing? Or is there some ego push to get something done? Or is there some ill will when I'm doing it? Or is there some greed? I have to get something. Keep checking in. Like when you're working in the garden, can you enjoy it while you're doing it? Can you enjoy a project while you're doing it? And not get lost in the results, because we can't control the results, because we can't control the rain, the sun, the little insects. We're planting a forest. And then I start seeing these tent caterpillars. And then I see they got to eat too. You know, it's just, they're just creatures. And because my mind will go to, there goes the oak trees, or there goes the whatever it is. But then the mind also says, well, this is just nature. It's just the way it is. And then when I turn to that, when I remind myself of that, that's like my reminding, I have a problem with 10 caterpillars, because I've seen them decimate the oak trees. Other people could care less about 10 caterpillars, or even think, well, why would you not like a cute little caterpillar? You know, and it's just conditioning. It's just conditioning. And it's a conditioning that's not seeing the true nature, that hasn't let go to see the true nature of reality. So as discontent or suffering arises, can I be there to let it go? Can I be present? Can I be aware to see it, to investigate it, to see there's no benefit to hanging on to it? And just keep reminding myself to turn away. And it's the hardest thing to do. But it's the most beautiful thing to do too. Yeah, thank you for the question. What we're trying to do is we're trying to disentangle ourselves from the ego and from the greed and from the hatred that And all the range of ill will and aversion, and all the range of greed and desire that come with this feeling as oneself, as a individual identity, as separate from everyone else. So as long as we're thinking of ourselves as, I'm just this person, this is it, and I'm separate from everyone else, what goes along with it is desires and aversions. That's part of it. And so what we're trying to do is go beyond this and trying to see, it's like our true nature. We're trying to wake up what is our true nature, which isn't an individual. It's like, what isn't an individual is this pure awareness, which has acceptance in it, which has contentment in it, this pure awareness. There's no judgment in it. There's no view, there's no opinion, there's no good, bad, pleasant, unpleasant. It's a pure awareness that just sees the show, but sees it like, even as soon as you say it's like a witness, I think people imagine witnesses have a view and opinion, and then, you know, then you're stuck again. That's why I think the Buddha tends not to describe what it is, but what it isn't. Because it's almost easier to describe what it isn't than what it is. Because it's not describable, because as soon as you're describing, you're in the realm of objectifying again, and it's not an object. So we have to remind ourselves what it isn't. So I'm using contentment. I just like that word, and I like to think about, am I content? But it's also like saying, am I suffering? That's another way, because he tends to use the what it's not. He says, awakening, there's no suffering. So then you think, well, what's no suffering? But we tend to think of it as an ego individual, whereas pure awareness is our true nature. It's here right now. You're aware, you're conscious, you're all conscious, you're all here and you're all conscious. Pure consciousness is here. It's just the ego is just infusing itself in it with its views and opinions and its thoughts and its expressions. And once we can see that, then, and we don't take it so seriously, and we just see it, it's arising because of conditioning, that's where the freedom is. So I threw out the word contentment because I like it. But it's just another theme for a Dhamma talk, you know, just to maybe have a connection. And it is a good reminder, I think, for me, as we're doing a project, building project, and it is a good reminder. So I gave myself a Dhamma talk on contentment. When you get it, I'll get one too. So.
Sadhu, 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 anumodaya.